So welcome back, everyone. Daryl and I are going to do some talking now about bringing this, it's often called integrating the practice into daily life, and I think every teacher I've heard give this kind of talk starts by saying it's really not about integrating the practice into daily life. It's more like the practice is your life, and the real meditation is your life. But there is a, I guess you could use that word integrating as well, because there is a process of cultivating mindfulness, sustaining mindfulness. I think Daryl used the word continuous mindfulness and deep knowing or deep seeing, and then so sustaining it, having continuous mind, and then it really kind of moves into daily life. It becomes your habit of mind with lots of practice. So the real meditation is really how you live your daily life. It's how you live your life. In order to live your life fully in this way, you have to be present for it. If you're lost in your mind, thinking about the past or the future, you're not really being present for your life, because the present moment is all you really. It is your life. So we're just bringing ourselves back to being present for our life, bringing mindfulness to whatever arises. Whatever's arising inwardly and whatever's arising outwardly. Body sensations, thoughts, but also noticing what's happening outside of us. The Buddha often talked about inward and outward when he's talking about the foundations of mindfulness. All of them he refers to inward and outward. So bringing mindfulness to the entirety of our experience. And as part of this, kindness is central. We've said that a few times, how kindness is and self-compassion is so central to this practice. And we begin again. So we look to see, well, I was lost in thought. It's okay. That's what minds do. I mean, if you've discovered one thing this weekend, it's perhaps that the mind it likes to think thoughts. It's really good at thinking thoughts, and struggling with that in some way is kind of like struggling with the sky not to have clouds. The sky is going to cloud. It just does. And it's the nature of the sky for clouds to pass through. So perhaps you've discovered that as well. It's a fruitless endeavor to try and control this the mind's secretion of thought. You can be with it. You can come back to the present moment. You can notice it. Notice that the mind is thinking, and notice what happens when you notice it. Noticing the power of mindfulness. So as I said, the present moment is the only moment you have. That's your life. So I got asked, I remember when I was some years ago, what's so special about this present moment? Keep talking about it. It's your life. I mean, that's what's special about it. It's that is your only moment. The rest is it's thoughts about your life, which is your life in that moment. Yeah, the thought about. So you can think of this as a phrase I heard, and I just love it: a gentle love affair with life. Gentle love affair with present moments in your life, being present for your life. So it's more of a being than a doing. So really, I can give tips and tricks about, you know, how to be mindful in daily life. And these are helpful, of course, and we will do that. But, you know, and ultimately it's a doing. It's a way of being in the world. So there are formal practices which we've been engaging in here. They're called formal practices as opposed to informal. It's kind of a labeling that we give different practices. Formal meaning, you know, you set the intention to have a sitting practice or a walking meditation practice for a certain amount of time, and you maybe set a timer on an insight timer on your telephone or some other timer method. I guess these even have timers on them, I'm not sure, but I use Insight Timer on my phone just to set the amount of time I'm going to do this formal practice, such as sitting meditation, mindful movement, mindful walking, where we set that intention to take some time to be present with our experience, to come back to the present moment over and over again. And then there's informal practices, and that's basically the way that mindfulness manifests and the practice manifests in your daily life, how you're bringing it to routine activities in your daily life, how you're bringing it to your interactions with other people in your daily life, how you're bringing it to your time with your dog, time with your children, your time with coworkers, with loved ones, with difficult people. Where the informal practice is taking place. So-called informal practice in your life, and both of these practices are really grounding you in. In the Dharma, in mindfulness, and deepening and strengthening the mindfulness, and accelerating it in many ways. We've talked often about this notion of creating new neural pathways. The Buddha didn't talk this way, but I'm sure if he was here now, he'd probably be talking about neural, because we know that science. We have that science now to know there's new habits developing is one way to put it, but it's also happening at a biological, physiological level. And this process is accelerated with our practice. Quite simply, that's why we emphasize practice so much. So we bring awareness to our present moments as best we can. And we're compassionate towards ourselves when we forget. And we start anew. It's no different, really, than you're sitting there following your breath. Things happen, thoughts happen, body sensations happen. You remember, you come back. And it's the same in life. You go through life doing particular things, with the intention to be mindful, you forget. Perhaps you're reactive towards someone or in a situation. You remember, you come back to the present moment. And you just keep doing that. And doing that, and you'll see that it deepens and sustains itself. And, at first there's some effort, I talked about, there's some effort to remembering and setting that intention. Increasingly, it becomes more effortless. It becomes the default setting. You're just being with our moments. You're not trying to create any kind of special feeling or experience. Sometimes, I can remember practicing and thinking, "Well, I should feel like something more." I should feel, you know, I thought I was going to be really happy and elated and tranquility. Where's this bliss thing? And, you know, I was grasping. I was grasping for something. And I was in the process of kind of letting go of that. Of course, these, you know, there's room, there's space for all kinds of experiences, all kinds of feelings. One thing you might have noticed, and I'm not sure, perhaps I'm the only one, that this is really hard. This is hard. It's hard to do. It takes effort.
Courage,
that's the word I was looking for. Thank you. It takes courage. It's hard. It's hard work. It's also fun, so you can be playful with it and bring a sense of humor to it. But I think it's hard. But it's worth it. It's nothing less than the transformation of your life. What did? Probably take me a while to find this. It's one of my favorite two lines from. T.S. Eliot. There it is, the four quartets, little gilding. A condition of complete simplicity, costing nothing less than everything. I mean, it's everything. Two beautiful lines. It's a condition of complete simplicity, costing not less than everything. So it's worth it. It's worth it. It takes lots of practice. But the good news is that you have lots of moments to practice. Right? Every moment is a moment that you can practice. So it's a moment that you're present with. You can notice, there's a moment I'm present. And, or it's a moment that you're not present with. You can notice, there's a moment I'm not present with. And just that. So that's it. And remembering, you know, Dara pointed out that, you know, sati in the Pali word, I think the root of it is what I've been told is actually is the word remembering. It's got more connection with the word remembering. Mindfulness is kind of I forget who made it up, but a British
translator
made up this. Kind of made up this word that thought fit it. It's a cool sounding word, but it's also, you know, it's just about being present with them, about remembering. So that it's interesting then that word contains that seed of remembering. So you have lots of moments, and you can treat each one as a new beginning. So you remember, you come back, remember, with compassion. Not like, I forgot again. You know, we can beat ourselves up and try to take some of the joy out of the practice. So it's a gentle reminding, remembering. And remembering that all the thoughts, opinions, likes and dislikes are like weather patterns passing through the sky. You can be aware of them, but you don't have to be imprisoned by them. You don't have to let them jerk you around. You don't have to be imprisoned by them. If you think of that metaphor as the sky and the weather patterns pass through the sky, but the sky is unaffected. The sky is still the sky. It doesn't become less sky-like because of a storm that passes through. So you can become kind of aware of these weather patterns that pass through your experience, throughout your day. We're really becoming in touch with our true selves, or our authentic selves. We're living with a kind of a knowing of our true nature, our true humanity. And that's, you know, insight meditation. It's a deep seeing. Insight is this deep seeing into our true nature, or as some call it, our Buddha nature, our Christ nature, whatever kind of spiritual tradition. It's this divinity within that, you know, when we bow to. So we're getting in touch with that and living an authentic life based on this knowing, as opposed to the sort of perhaps living from the ego, or the egotistical, some people call it the small self, the self that's it can be our default position without this practice. So I have a little list here of, and I think Daryl will say more about living the authentic life. I see she's got our teacher. That's really what he emphasizes in this work is living an authentic life. But I got a little list here of things that. Before I do that, here's another little. I wanted to read this. It's from to the Condensed Chicken Soup for the Soul. Anybody's read that book from way back when? It's cute. It's Nadine Starr, Condensed Chicken Soup for the Soul. If I Had My Life to Live Over is the title. If I Had My Life to Live Over. I dare to make more mistakes next time. I'd relax. I would limber up. I would be sillier than I have been on this trip. I would take fewer things seriously. I would take more chances. I would take more trips. I would climb more mountains and swim more rivers. I would eat more ice cream and less beans. Try that one. I would perhaps have more actual troubles. This is a good one. I would perhaps have more actual troubles, but I'd have fewer imaginary ones. You see, I'm one of those people who live sensibly, insanely, hour after hour, day after day. Oh, I've had my moments, and if I had to do it over again, I'd have more of them. In fact, I try to have nothing else, just moments. One after another, instead of living so many years ahead of each day. I've been one of those people who never go anywhere without a thermometer, a hot water bottle, a raincoat, and a parachute. If I had my life to live over, I would start barefoot earlier in the spring and stay that way later in the fall. If I had to do it again, I would travel lighter next time. I would go to more dances, ride more merry-go-rounds, and I would pick more daisies. Yeah. Some real gems in there. So that's kind of what we're talking about. I like the not taking it, you know, taking ourselves so seriously. It's a big part of, I think, living the authentic life is that, and seeing why that is so. Now the one of the things, part of living this in the daily life, is letting go. And we talk about that, and allowing and letting go over and over again. Allowing and letting go. And a metaphor that may help you remember this is there's a story that in India, to catch monkeys, they take a coconut. They probably use a empty plastic Coke bottle now, but they used to use a coconut, and they cut a hole in it and put a banana inside and hang it in a tree. And the monkey will see the banana and stick their hand in to grab the banana. And but the banana is too big to come out of the hole that's been cut in the coconut, but they won't let go of the banana. They're not trapped in the sense of they're not imprisoned in a confined like a trap, a space. All they have to do is let go of the banana, and their hand can come back out. But they hold on to that banana, and they're captured. So it's a little metaphor for letting go of your bananas. And this is whatever your bananas might be. There's this throughout the day. We're continually letting go of our bananas. So there's actually a poem called "Dropping the Banana" by Anne Merriwood, Merriwood, Merriwood. "Dropping the Banana." Dropping the banana is all I have to do. All I have to do is to let it go. Like a falcon releasing a rabbit. Like an athlete relinquishing a golden dream. Like a hungry child tossing a ripe mango into the sun. All I have to do, I dread. All I have to do, I dread. What happens if I can't let go? What happens if I can? Surely it is safer not to experiment. For, see here, I am not alone. At the office, by the pool, I recognize you, fellow monkeys, clinging to the thresholds of normalcy. Rattling imprisoned limbs, you dare me to desert. All I have to do, I do. Finger by finger, I loosen my grip. There was no banana. Only a fist contorted with fear, choking the innocent air. There was no banana, only a fist, contorted with fear, choking the innocent air. I found that story, helpful in my practice. I go, oh, there's a banana. Oh, another banana. And just calling them bananas kind of brought a bit of a sense of humor. I can remember, many years ago, I'd sitting in meditation, I'd have the same friggin' thought patterns. I'd have these drama stories. I think you call them dramas, and I'd have the same dramas come up. And I started saying, "Oh, there's the neighbor banana." Not calling my neighbor a banana, but calling it the drama, neighbor drama, and then I picture a banana. That's what would just happen, and then it would self liberate. So, it's just these kind of top 10 tunes is another way to look. It would just keep playing. Just kind of like, wow, really? Again? And I finish a sitting, I think, I must be done with that banana by now. Next sitting, there it is again. Seeing these bananas and noticing and letting them go. And for me, the sense of humor helped a little bit because I had to eventually, because if I took that seriously, I could really start to be like, what's wrong with me? I keep having these same dramas that are imaginary, right? Then, of course, I'd bring the person into loving kindness when I did my meditation. It'd be okay. Send them some that time. So those are just some helpful some things that I found helpful in reminding myself, using those little metaphors and little cues to remind myself. Some things to consider. First of all, how this manifests as a formal practice and as an informal practice in your how you live your is unique for everyone. So everyone's going to find their own way of doing this. So there's no I don't have a sheet of paper that says you get up at 6 o'clock, meditate for 45 minutes, you know, or do some stretch. Things manifest different for all of us. And, you know, people ask those questions, how long and when and so forth. And it'll be unique for everybody. But I have some kind of things that I've seen helpful that are helpful for me, and I've seen that have been helpful for other students and things that you might consider. The first one I wrote down, it was... I did this last night, was take walks. I'm not sure what that... I don't mean just mindful walks as a formal practice, but just walking in nature as an informal, as a practice. I just find that just taking some time in nature. We spend so much time in front of computers and gadgets of some kind, televisions, and, you know, lights kind of flashing at our retina, that just being out with trees and chipmunks and chickadees and nature is so replenishing, so replenishing. And I think we can bring mindfulness. It's an easeful way to bring mindfulness into an event in our life. Turning daily routines into mindfulness moments is a wonderful one. Thich Nhat Hanh, who was one of my early teachers, talked about, you know, making washing the dishes a meditation. So he had washing the dishes meditation. And it's just bringing whatever kind of routine activities you find yourself engaged in. And you may think of them as boring. You can, if you bring mindfulness to them, now all of a sudden they're transforming. They can be transforming. A little story, and I better not tell too many or I'll run out of time, but I had one of my banana issues, whatever, was impatience. And so I told the teacher that this is what I see arising is impatience, and of course, yes. Well, how's that feel in the body? And so we talked about how that, you know, constriction and so forth. So he said, "Well, I've got a practice for you." I said, "Oh, that's wonderful." He says, "So I want you to go to the supermarket." So he asked, "So when does this manifest?" So I said, "When I'm standing in lines, or you know where this is going, right?" I said, "Go to the supermarket, and you don't need to need anything. You just going to practice, to have a practice. Go to the supermarket, get an item just so you have something in your hand when you're in line, and pick the longest line and stand there and notice what arises. Notice impatience and the body sensations, the thoughts that arise with it, the whole experience, the full catastrophe. And notice it. And if it dissipates, put the item back, or if you need the item, buy it. But if you get to the cash and you're still noticing impatience arising, go to another line. And so I said, well, yeah, that'd be interesting, yeah. I'll do that now and again. He goes, no, I want you to do this every day. So I set the intention, and it was, what a practice that was, to just take something that, you know, was difficult, never mind routine, but difficult, and turn it into an investigation, into a way to deeply see. So we can take these routine activities, and we can even take difficult activities and make them into a practice. Let's think a little bit about, well, what's maybe your banana that you can sort of identify, or maybe it'll come to you as you're driving home, and see what it feels like. You know, play with it. Yeah. It may not resonate with you. It resonated with me personally, but that may not resonate with you. But impatience was something I struggled with. So to get to know it deeply transformed my relationship to it. Totally transformed my relationship to it. Just watch it. Yeah, there it is. Hello. And so there's no juice there now, right? The juice starts to, it loses its juice. That's how I like to put it. So turning routine activity tasks into mindful moments and even difficult tasks. Paying attention to breathing. Breath is always there, and we use it with informal practice, but any time during the day you can pay attention to your breathing. You know, in some mindfulness-based interventions, there's a 3-minute breathing space or a stop practice where we stop, take a breath, observe, and proceed. Is one acronym that we use. The 3-minute breathing space is we stop, we experience what's, you know, this is if there's a stressful event that arises, stop, feel what's happening in the body, focus our attention onto the breath, and then expand out to the entire experience and then proceed. So they're just ways to come to the breath just for a pause. A sacred pause. And in that little pause, so many more options can open up. So just noticing, paying attention to the breath. Is the breathing shallow? Is it deep? And that could tell you things about your experience in that moment. What else did I write? Do one thing at a time, as best you can. There's a little comic somebody sent me. There's a manager calls somebody into their office and says, I'm really having a hard time, but I'm looking for a staff person that can unitask. Everybody can multitask, but this manager wanted somebody that could do one thing at a time and was having difficulty finding this person because we think, because we're multi. I used to teach at a university and students would be Facebooking and some watching movies during class. And I said to them, how can you be... Please don't. And how can you possibly be learning absorbing what we're talking about? So, oh, we're different. This generation's different. We can multitask. I can chat. I can Facebook. And I can watch a movie. And I can sit in class and learn. So, I wasn't convinced. Maybe I'm old-fashioned. I don't know. But I would say for this practice, doing one thing at a time is helpful. Larry Rosenberg, Vipassana teacher, insight meditation teacher, has four steps to mindfulness. Do one thing at a time. Notice when your mind wanders. When your mind wanders, bring it back. Step 3. Step 4 is repeat step 2 and 3 1 billion times. So if you maybe got a couple thousand on this, so you only have 900 million. That's basically, we're doing one thing at a time, noticing when our mind wanders. I wrote down here, know when not to check your phone. Mm-hmm. And that's probably a new one that's come into our teaching, newer-ish. Do I have my phone? Yeah, it's because now we're ready to get home. This phone, constantly, it's almost worn out. I will notice this arising. It's not, it still happens. It's still, even though I'm noticing it, it's become a mindfulness bell for me. So when the urge to pull my phone out arises, something's there. There's something I want to distract myself from. It can be quite subtle, but that mindfulness bell of that urge to pull out the phone is what can it points me to, what's there? So then I can investigate. It's often very subtle. It's just under the level of conscious awareness, if you know what I mean. There's something subtle there. I used to walk by the office of a person I was having a lot of difficulties with, and I started to notice every time I'd walk by their door, the door's closed, I'd start to reach for my phone. And that was just this subtle kind of little subtle aversion arising, not conscious. Like, I wasn't looking at their door and going, "Oh, hope they don't walk out." It was just walking by. And it'd be, "Oh, pull out my phone." And it just, so it's just this little subtle mindfulness bell to notice. So there's for me, it's a practice that I continue to look at, to see what's there. Maybe you use your phone that way, maybe you don't. It's everybody's a little different on how they relate to these technologies. I've got everything on mine, from my meditation timer to my calendar and so forth. So I spend a lot of time on it. Feel what you feel. So it's not about being happy or blissful. It's about feeling what you feel in the moment, all the time. Not just when we're sitting. It's all the time, and acceptance of the moment. Not resisting or grasping. We've used just accepting. So really feeling what's arising in the moment. And noticing how maybe you distract yourself from it. Do you get a busy mind, start thinking about something else? Do you get sleepy and want to fall asleep? Do you start to go, all this practice, it doesn't really make any sense, I don't know why I'm doing it, and then start to do, so doubt and restlessness, sleepiness. Go jump on the computer to shop on Amazon. sense desire. So whatever, just notice sort of what's arising. And practice. Practice, practice. Lots of practice. I practice in the morning. I notice with many people that's a helpful time to practice. It's kind of like tuning your instrument for the day. John Kabat-Zinn says, sewing your parachute for the day, so that when you need it, you pull the safety cord, that there's a nicely sewn parachute and not a half sewn. So I think kind of look at, I really like the notion of, just, and for me it really is kind of a putting that mental habit of mindfulness, it just kind of, firing those neural pathways, exercising them, or whatever. There's something about just doing this in the morning. And, if it's 15 minutes, or 30 minutes, or 45 minutes, or an hour, see how you can fit in some time. And we all have different schedules and different lives, so you'll have to. That's something you just have to. You set the intention, and then you work with it. Now, we talked about this in our meetings, and I think it's really helpful to build it into the habit, the ritual of the morning ritual of the household that you live in. If there's other people around, or pets, or whatever, there tends to be a morning routine. So if you can make this part of that morning routine, so. Mine was, for many years, my daughter's not living at home now, but for many years it would be, I would meditate for the amount of time it would take her in the bathroom, which is a long time. It was a good 45-minute, meditation. And we would, I knew that's how long it was, and I'd have my timer, and she'd walk out of the bathroom, and I'd walk out of the meditation room every morning at exactly the same time. And we go downstairs and we'd have our breakfast together. So it was built into, and it was beautiful having, time after a meditation with my daughter.
Oh.
I miss it. So that's just building that and seeing how beautiful it can be to have that that time in that way with family. I have next, be conscious of what you put in your body and mind. So it's what we consume into our body, but also our mind. What we the Buddha talked a lot about this. We what we feed is what grows. So we watch what kind of materials, what kind of media we consume as well. It's part of bringing this into your life. Don't take yourself so seriously. And the chicken soup poem spoke to that. You know. You should be sillier and taking things less seriously. I think that's part of realizing selflessness. There's no self there to take seriously, in an ultimate sense. But I think even in a relative sense, there's a freedom to just allowing yourself to be. Using cues or prompts to remind ourselves to be mindful. Thich Nhat Hanh has mindfulness bells. You can download one onto your computer. I used to have one on my computer in my office at school, and it would go off randomly. So a student would be in the office, and all of a sudden my computer would go ding. And to kind of look. And I would just kind of start looking at the ceiling or the floor, and so they'd start to look at the ceiling. And then I'd explain what it was, and students that got to know me kind of expected it might happen. But and throughout the day, I would just be a pause. And I learned this from staying with the Thich Nhat Hanh monks. They had this in the monastery. It would just there'd be a mindfulness bell that would just randomly go off in the monastery, and everybody would just stop and pause, sort of come back home, back to themselves. Keep tune into what's arising. So these are helpful. I had a practice where I set the intention to always walk up or down the stairs mindfully. And if I got halfway down the stairs and I was lost in thought, I'd go back up and start over again. It's amazing, the mind kind of goes, oh, I might as well be mindful because he's just going to start over again. And so that was just a way of stop at a traffic light. Some people, the phone ringing is another. You can just use those bells and moments to come home to yourself. And little cues, pick, whatever you think would work for you. Or you might notice them as you're going through your day, what they might be. Bringing mindfulness to our interactions with other people. We spend a lot of time in relationship with other people. And it's also a place where we can notice where we're reactive. So really bringing mindfulness, and this is a whole, we could do a whole retreat on this, and people do. And there's specific ways to cultivate this in terms of deep listening, and the whole practice called insight dialogue that you can practice to bring. To keep it simple, when we're in relationship in dialogue, we can really be in tune with what's arising in our bodies, what we might notice in the other person's body, in terms of their face and their body language. So it's being in tune with that, and kind of perhaps not just the words, but the felt experience. So you're present for the felt experience of the dialogue. So it's really that's bringing mindfulness to what's arising in the dialogue. I find a movement practice really helpful as well. It's just a whatever it might be for you, whether it's yoga or tai chi or martial art or swimming, or some kind of movement that you do, you purposefully bring mindfulness to it. One of the monks I was, his was jogging. He was watching me mindfully walk, and he said, "Do you want to try this faster?" Sure. Robes and everything, and he runs through the woods, jumping over logs, and you do it mindfully, bring your attention. And he had this whole process that he explained to me on how to jog mindfully and how he does it, and it was a practice. It was a very, he had really thought it through and developed it as a practice. So it can be many different things depending on who you are. I dragon boat, and so that's a sport that you can bring mindfulness to it, and in fact it intends mindfulness. People don't realize this for the most part, but the winning teams are the ones that do this together in an interconnected way, as it like one body, and because you stroke at the same time, you win. You can be big muscle bound people and be beat by little people, older people. And our team wins, and we're a bunch of older people. People look at us. And so you can use that kind of find a movement that's helpful for you.
It's actually complete. We have walking now, and we have some.
Did I go that long?
Yeah. But it was great. It was wonderful. I surrendered to the moment.
She pinched me or something.
So let's just sit for a couple of minutes.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.